Hello and welcome to the Monday, March 3rd edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. It is 2:59 p.m. Our guests today are Mary Hakala of the Great Alaskan Schools, representatives of the Juno Skating Club to talk about upcoming skating lessons, Honorable Keith Levy and Attorney Hannah Sibold will be here to talk about Success Inside and Out, the annual day devoted to working with Lemon Creek inmates prior to their release, and the JPEG KTOO show, First Friday Double Exposure Show from Juno Photographic Group. All that, Writer's Almanac and more. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Environmental Protection Agency is moving to restrict development of the Pebble Mine in Alaska under a section of the Clean Water Act. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy made the announcement during a teleconference Friday.
We're beginning the Section 404C process to determine how EPA can best use its authorities to protect Bristol Bay rivers, streams, and lakes from the damage that will inevitably result from the construction, operation, and long-term maintenance of a large-scale copper mine.
The Pebble Mine site is located on state land near Lake Iliamna at the headwaters of creeks and streams that flow into Bristol Bay near Dillingham and King Salmon, the center of a thriving sockeye salmon fishery considered the world's largest. EPA officials said the reason for the decision is that Bristol Bay produces nearly half the world's sockeye salmon, and salmon is also the primary source of subsistence food for local people. The EPA started looking into the impact the mine could have in 2010 at the request of Alaska Native tribes. In January, they released an assessment which concludes that a large gold, copper, and molybdenum mine could destroy dozens of miles of salmon spawning grounds and would pose significant risk to the region's sockeye salmon runs and its people. Alaska's Attorney General Michael Garrity has said the state will explore all available legal options if 404C is invoked. The Pebble Partnership, the company behind the mine, has not yet submitted a plan or applied to the state for permits needed to develop the mine. The 404C process should take about a year. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Iditarod sled dog race kicked off over the weekend. 69 mushers took off on the more than 1,000-mile trek across Alaska. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes spoke with some of the Native participants.
Alaska Native mushers in the Iditarod include John Kuniak Baker of Kotzebue. The 51-year-old has run 18 Iditarods and finished in the top 10 13 times. He set a new record for speed when he took first place in 2011, the first Inupiaq Eskimo ever to win the Iditarod and the first Alaska Native to win since 1976.
We'll definitely have a strategy that's probably going to be taking more chances than I'm normally taking, but I think it'll work out pretty well this year.
Yupik Pete Kaiser, 26, hails from Bethel in western Alaska. He's run the Iditarod four times, with his top finish being fifth place in 2012. He says his team is young but in good form.
I'll have to get 500 or 600 miles into the race to see how competitive this team is.
Unusually warm weather in Alaska has left some parts of the Iditarod Trail bare of snow and with open water in some rivers and streams. 29-year-old Yupik Michael Williams Jr. of Akiak has run the Iditarod four times with a top finish of eighth place in 2012. He says it's been a warm winter in his hometown of Akiak, too.
My team is ready for anything.
Top mushers are expected into Nome in the next 8 to 10 days. I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The Nisqually tribe in Washington recently dedicated a new public safety complex. The $20 million facility is scheduled to open this month. It includes a nearly 300-bed detention building with the potential to expand to more than 500 beds. Tribal leaders say the new jail will help with the overcrowding. About 80 people will be employed at the facility. On this day in 1865, the Colorado River Indian Reservation was established. The reservation spans the Colorado River and has land in Arizona and California. It's home to four different tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. It is Monday, March 3rd, and it is 3.05 p.m. And as far as weather, it is still sunny out there, very windy downtown, and an advisory for a strong wind through this afternoon near downtown Juno and Douglas. Tonight, clear, lows 10 to 16. Tomorrow, sunny. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Wednesday, sunny. Wednesday night, mostly clear. Thursday and Thursday night, partly cloudy, and chance of snow on Friday. That is a great winter forecast. Coming up at KTOO, their 360 North studio is hosting the Writers' Showcase Awakenings this Thursday, March 6th. Live reading of stories around the theme of awakenings written by Alaskan writers. There'll be four writers, and it's performed by Perseverance Actors. This is at Pay As You Can in the new spot. New space downstairs. Doors open at 6:30. It records at 7 p.m. That's Thursday. Awakenings, KTOO, Writer Showcase. You can find out more at ktoo.org. Our first guest on Juno Afternoon is Mary Hakala of Great Alaskan Schools. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good to be here.
How are you today?
Excited to report in on lots happening in Alaska and a lot of advocacy going on for our schools.
Yes, let's talk about it. Let's first talk about the organization, Great Alaskan Schools. What is it?
Okay, Great Alaska Schools is a nonpartisan, statewide grassroots citizen coalition, kind of a big mouthful. But we began our work in 2004 and worked very hard for 4 years, made a difference in the Capitol building on school funding front. We're parents, we're citizens, community members, business leaders, and kind of an email advocacy network. We really regrouped this year, and because, again, there's a crisis in public education, and there are deep cuts, and a lot of parents are hopping mad.
Okay. And more than just parents. I mean,
it's
the future of our state. I mean, high-growth industries, we're going to do outside hires completely. Like, who's going to be our future leaders? Who's going to be our future workforce?
Very true.
So let's talk about Great Alaska Schools. So it's about advocacy, and it's what are the issues facing Alaska right now?
The two primary, the big ones, one, first and foremost, on every community's mind and in their news is school funding. What cuts are your schools having to face? In Juneau, the cuts are deep. They're looking at right now under the governor's preliminary budget that they'll be cutting up to 19.5 classroom teachers, another 7.5 special ed staff. 140,000 out-of-school activities, custodian cut. This is on top of all the other cuts that have been accumulating for the past several years. The legislature has not kept up with inflation or other cost escalators. So the result is local school boards are having to both try to innovate, you know, try to do more with less, all those things, but the reality is they end up facing some big cuts that will harm classrooms and impact the quality of education that is available to us here in Juneau and to kids across the state.
So when you say like 19, 20 classroom teachers, how big are the classes going to be?
Well, it varies. I don't have it all right at my fingertips right now because there's early elementary grades, intermediate, middle school, and high school. There's set pupil-teacher ratios. Right now, they're looking at, in a preliminary way, a lot of discussion about raising that pupil-teacher ratio by 3 students at every grade level, potentially. That's huge. I mean, I know that the goal had been to keep PTR down as low as possible, particularly in those early grades. But, you know, you see it also in middle school. I mean, you've got these rooms crammed full of kids, you know, hormones raging, you know, just active, and it's like, wow, it's hard to do quality classroom management and instruction the bigger the classroom gets.
And to help the wide variety of kids. I mean, if you have 30, 35 kids in a class, people can fall through the cracks.
Just, absolutely, even ever more so.
So that's one of the issues.
That's one of the issues.
So that's one of the issues is the school funding has not increased the base.
The foundation formula is what drives funding in public education. It's set out in statute. It's a formula. It's driven by the number of students. They convert it into something fancy called average daily membership. But it's numbers of students times a set amount called the base student allocation, BSA. Currently, that's set in statute at 5,680. Then you go on, and there's weighted factors for special needs populations and vocational education and a variety of things that ultimately then kicks out at the other end and gives each school district, per the statutes, what they're entitled to under this formula. Schools across the state and our group, Great Alaska Schools, is strongly advocating for an increase to the BSA, the base student allocation, because you have numbers of students times this base funding level. It has not been adjusted for inflation for the last 3 years. The legislature has given one-time shots of money, but it's not been enough, nor has it rolled forward.
Right. So if there's no, it's like how does a business, how does any organization succeed without knowing what their operating budget is? So it seems like every year the schools are just scrambling. It seems like there's no real forward planning possible because of the funding formula.
Right.
Or the
I mean, you could simply plan for these kind of deep, devastating cuts, but the reality is no one wants things to get this bad.
Right.
And so everyone, you know, as we should advocate. Certainly school boards members are doing so, an array of people. But really what I have seen in the Capitol building, parents, citizens, business leaders, community members speaking with their own voice really are an effective and powerful advocate for their kids and their community. Legislators are not accustomed to seeing just everyday citizens coming to them and saying, you know, this is a problem. And so it is very powerful, and we want to continue mobilizing folks and letting them know. Go to the greatalaskaschools.org website. What we try to do is make it as easy as possible for people to advocate for their own school, for their own child, for their neighbor's kids, you know, for great public education.
So what can people do? So let's say somebody's listening and they say, you know what, that's crazy. Like, we're a really rich state and we should have one of the best education systems in the country. So, you know, a lot of people have their heart in the right place and they may agree with your organization, but what can they do?
First, I really encourage you to go to the website. There is a place to click on and join, and then you will get bulletins with updates and notifications that we're doing a new post, because we try to keep people appraised of what's happening in the Capitol building and when are the crucial times to speak up, be seen, be heard. One time to be heard is tomorrow, and be seen is tomorrow. The House Finance Committee is taking testimony on the operating budget. The foundation program is one line, or several lines actually, in that budget bill. It totals about $1.2 billion. So it's not any small Trump change. It's important that people let legislators know that it's not enough. People should also remember, as large as that number is, a lot of it, a big portion of that, is actually going to defray the cost of teachers' retirement and public employee retirement systems. So as big as that number is, a very large percentage of that actually goes to bend down the needs of the retirement systems, the past liabilities.
So it's not in the classroom.
It's not going to the classroom. And that's actually the money going to the classroom. That's where it's been flat. And so when it's flat, you basically have eroding purchasing power.
So what time is this, the House Finance Committee hearing?
So tomorrow, House Juno's time slot, it's only 2 minutes to testify.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, keep it simple. And that's why also we give you some tips and pointers. If you go to the website, it's definitely, we want unique, your own voice. But 1:30 to 2:45 is Juno's time slot. In the House Finance Committee room, that's fifth floor of the Capitol building. Sign up a little early to get on the roster, but definitely sign up before 2:30, or they might cut you off. Again, 1:30 to 2:45, Tuesday, tomorrow, in House Finance Committee Room, the fifth floor of the Capitol building.
Okay, so let's just say Jane or Joe, public listening right now, and always wanted to get involved. Now I live in the Capitol, but have yet to actually testify. So what I'm hearing, you tell me if I'm wrong, is that anyone could go to your website, greatalaskaschools.org, and that you'll have some talking points, but you're not asking them to go with that script. You are asked, those are kind of like a guideline for them to share their own story. They go up to the Capitol, they sign in, and then they're called, and they have 2 minutes to say their piece, and the House Finance Committee, one of very important people who are making decisions about our state and the future of our education, would have the opportunity to hear them firsthand. Is
yes.
that correct?
That is correct. And it's also important to note that Kathy Munoz is one of the members of the Finance Committee members, so needs to hear from constituents, and as do all the members. But she is particularly an important person for Juno sitting on that committee. And the members of that committee actually have tally marks. And sometimes in the past, when things like public broadcasting was up for cuts or increases, they logged in the degree of interest the public showed by showing up. It's one of those times it's valuable to show up.
Okay. Let's say you're listening and you are, for whatever reason, cannot go tomorrow. An email, a call, how do people do it if they can't physically be in that room tomorrow?
The next best is to email all the House Finance Committee members.
And where would you find that?
Go to www.greatalaskaschools.org, and we have listed all the House Finance Committee members. And we always, always suggest to also CC anyone else you might personally know. We happen to live in the Capitol, so sometimes you have friends who are legislators, or certainly let Senator Egan know. And we're fortunate. We can actually show up in mass, and I think that's important to be visible.
Okay.
There is another very big issue out there that I think people need to be aware of, and that is the constitutional amendment that would open the door to a voucher or voucher-like program that allows, it would amend our state's constitution to allow public dollars to be spent on private and religious schools.
And you were just talking about the public dollars that at the moment are inadequate, is that correct?
Right. So the two are intertwined in the sense that as funding diminishes and people become frustrated with the education system, there's more and more interest in running to private schools. And unfortunately, it's not the answer. Think about it for a second. It seems like, okay, privatize. But in reality, public education is like the cornerstone of democracy. It's where we all learn, live, play, work together with people who are different from ourselves. And it's from that time together that later in life we say, boy, you know, they may be a different skin color or different religion, or we have a really different opinion on this matter, but you know what? They were my classmate. They're not a bad person. And it's part of that fabric of our society that's really important, that it is the melting pot of America. Plus, the reality is, if a voucher program were adopted, it could divert, a nonpartisan study by Legislative Finance found, up to $100 million would be added to the cost of education in the state without it ever touching public education, because anyone who's currently in private schools would then be eligible for a subsidy. So automatically we have added up to $100 million expense to the state of Alaska. Right now, the legislature has not been even willing to keep pace with inflation. How realistic are they going to keep pace with inflation plus add $100 million? It's a practical problem.
Indeed. So if people are opposed to this possible constitutional amendment to take public funds and use them for private schools, what can they do?
First, they can go to grayalaskaschools.org. We are strongly opposed to the constitutional amendments and their talking points and lists of legislators to contact. Those bills have actually moved a long ways along in the system. And so they are poised for a floor vote in the Senate. There are swing votes that are very important. I'm proud to say that Senator Egan is strongly opposed. But he needs to hear, too, from people saying, thank you, Senator Egan, for that opposition.
And do you know when that vote will take place?
Nope.
Okay. So
it's
out there.
They may schedule it simply to force a vote. Typically, they don't schedule it unless they have the votes. They need 14 votes. Right now they do not have them, but it's close enough that no one should take for granted that this is not a real issue. And it would have, I believe, devastating impacts to public education over the long haul.
Okay. If you were just joining us, you were just listening to Mary Hakala on Juno Afternoon on KTO News Juno. She is one of the many people behind Great Alaska Schools. She's the founder, and she's been doing tireless work for a long time. And so there are two issues out there. There's school funding and also a possible constitutional amendment for using public funds for education for private schools. To get involved, it's greatalaskaschools.org. And come on, Juno, we're in the Capitol. Tomorrow, 1:30 to 2:45, lawmakers want to hear about what you think about these things. So regardless of what you think, let's use our constitutional rights or our rights as Americans to get out there and say what we think.
Absolutely.
Mary, thank you so much for coming and all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to Jessica Campbell, who is going to be playing at the Alaskan March 3rd and tonight at 7 o'clock and tomorrow at UAS, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I am your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. That was Jessica Campbell we were just listening to. She's playing tonight at 7 p.m. at the Alaskan and tomorrow at UAS Rec Center from 7 to 9. And our last guest, Mary Hakala, she was talking to me on the way out the door. She said three Iditarod team mushers have been yielding the Great Alaska Schools banner, taking up the cause of getting more funds to our education system. Speaking of education, we have three educators here, not from the school, but from the skating club. And they are coaches and teachers. And we have a vibrant skating club over at the Treadwell Rink. And we have Brendan and Sigrid and Pam. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for having us, John.
Oh, glad to have you. So president and vice president and Team Alaska coordinator, figure skating coach, they're all here. So what's happening at the skating club?
Well, we're just about ready to start up our last session of lessons for the season. So the rink is going to close April 27th. This is the last chance to get in on some skating lessons before the end of the year. We have basic skills classes starting on Friday. So we have classes Friday and Saturday. They run March 7th through April 14th, once a week. And it's a great way to come and get some exercise and learn how to skate and meet some new people.
That sounds great. And where can people find out about all the different classes that you offer?
Everything is on our website, which is www.junoskatingclub.org.
Okay. So you have this basic skating skills class starting. Do you have any other classes?
Well, we have figure skating classes, but those are for skaters that advance from the basic skills program. And so those are already in session right now. So most of the figure skaters are training and gearing up. We just had our competition recently, and that was very exciting for us. And we also have them getting prepared, the figure skaters, for testing, which will happen March 30th. We bring judges that are official USFS judges, United States Figure Skating Association judges, in, and they test our skaters on skills.
That sounds great. Is there a regular time where the competitions take place? So does it happen like, oh, every March and every October, or is it once a year or twice a year?
The Juno Skating Club has one competition,
mm-hmm.
and that's usually at the end of February or the beginning of March.
Okay, great. Just something to look for, because it's always something that I want to see, and I know you have the word out there, but I think it was out of town, but I had friends who had children in it, and I know it's really spectacular.
And even better than that is our spring skating show, and I'll let Brendan talk about that.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so our end-of-the-year recital, our figure skating club program, is going to be this April 26th. It's a Saturday. We do two shows again this year. We will have an afternoon or a matinee show starting at 3:30. It's a two-hour show. We'll be including some warm beverages and a really wonderful program of all of the kids in the club from every level.
Tell them the theme.
Yeah,
the theme.
Exactly. So let's our theme this year. Was to help inspire the kids to keep being interested in skating and keeping our adults moving forward. And it's to celebrate the Winter Olympics that happened this year. So our theme for the club is celebrating figure skating through the history of the Winter Olympics. The figure skating sport is the oldest Olympic sport around, and so we want to highlight the evolution of our sport, and our kids are going to skate to past Olympian numbers and programs, and it's going to be really exciting. So we're going to highlight a lot of stuff this year.
And everybody in our basic skills program is invited to participate.
That sounds great. Yeah. So if you were watching the Olympics like just about everybody was, and you were looking at those amazing skaters and you go, oh, I really want to do this, or your kids want to do it, it's for both kids and adults. Is that correct?
That's right. Anybody that signs up to take lessons or has taken lessons all year in basic skills can be in the show. So it's your chance to get out there and have your little piece of fame, just like the Olympics.
Well, or just get your first steps, too, doing those basic skills classes. That's me and my fear of ice. But anyway, those basic skills classes, when do they start again? And those for children and adults.
Children and adults. They start this Friday. We have classes on Friday and on Saturday, and you just come back every Friday or Saturday. They run for 6 weeks. It's an hour on the ice, and you get you get instruction in a group at your level. So on Friday night, we have a group for just adults. So a lot of adults prefer to be in an adult-directed group, which is really fun. And but if you can only come on Saturday and you're an adult, you can just be in a group with the kids, too. That works great. On Saturday, we have a special group for younger kids. So we take four-year-olds on Saturday. Four- and five-year-olds are in our TOTS class, and they really thrive on that special emphasis on that age group.
I bet. And how do people find out and sign up again?
They should go on the Internet and get on our website at www.junoskatingclub.org.
Right. And if you can't remember that, just search for it, Juno Skating Club.
Or call the ice skating rink.
There you go. Well, does anyone have, do you have that number?
Do I have that number? Yeah, you do.
586-0410.
Okay, one more question. So let's say you don't have any gear. You don't have, I don't know if you need a helmet, I don't know what you need. Why don't you tell me what you need and how you could get it if you don't have it?
Okay, so if you don't have skates, that's fine. When you come to Basic Skills, you will be given rental skates to wear. And this year we got a grant from the Douglas Dornan Foundation, and that pays for all of the skate rentals. So you don't even have to pay for your skate rental. You just say what size you need, and there are your skates. The rink has a lot of helmets, too. So if you don't have a helmet that would work, you can come to the rink, and you can probably just pick one up off the wall and wear it during your lesson.
And is it a special skating helmet? That's
no, it's
specific?
The, it's same the thing same that you thing you'd wear
skiing.
Skateboarding, skiing. Not so much the pointy bike ones. But the typical rounded sports helmet
right.
Works great.
I would definitely think the bike helmet would not work. Okay, before we wrap up, thank you for all you do. I've seen your shows. It's a fantastic program. You put through a lot of kids, inspire a lot of kids, and there has to be a lot of wannabe skaters out there after the Olympics. What a show. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have anything to add? Do we miss anything?
I just would like to encourage everyone to take a look at our website. Go explore Facebook. We have a wonderful Facebook page that's posting information about our club and photos. We'll try to get as many things up about our students going to the Arctic Winter Games. And I would just encourage you, if you can't come and join us as a skater, maybe this year, come to our show and get inspired, and maybe we can get you going at the beginning of next year.
That's great. So
yeah, we'd love to have you there.
That's wonderful. So that's the Juno Skating Club. We're going to take a short break, go to Writer's Almanac, and we'll be right back. It's 3:31 p.m.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 3rd of March, 2014. 1875, on this day, the opera Carmen appeared on stage for the first time at the Opéra Comique in France. The audience shocked by the characters of Carmen, a gypsy girl, her lover, Don José. Georges Bizet died of a heart attack just 3 months after the debut. It was on this day, 1923, Time magazine was first published, still the most widely read weekly news magazine in the world, though circulation has declined since the late 1990s, still about 20 million Americans read it every week. 1931, on this day, the Star Spangled Banner became the official national anthem of the United States. Written by Francis Scott Key toward the end of the War of 1812, he put his poem to music, the song To Anacreon in Heaven, a barroom song. The Star Spangled Banner competed with My Country Tis of Thee and Hail Columbia for ceremonial uses. The U.S. Navy was the first to adopt the Star Spangled Banner officially in 1889. The White House recognized it in 1916, and in 1931, Congress made it official. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, published on this day, 1802, Piano Sonata No. 14 in C-sharp minor, Opus 27, No. 2. The moonlight was attached to the work years after Beethoven died. Beethoven himself thought of it as a reflection on death, sitting at the bedside of a very sick friend. It's the birthday of the host of This American Life, Ira Glass, born Baltimore, 1959. He was 19, college freshman, looking for a summer job, got an internship with NPR despite the fact that he'd never listened to public radio, became a producer of All Things Considered, then moved to Chicago, 1989, 6 years later launched This American Life. And it's the birthday of the poet James Merrill, 1926, New York City, son of the co-founder of Merrill Lynch, a trust fund boy, never had to worry about money, author of many collections of poems, including The Changing Light at Sandover, 1982. Here's a poem for today by Cecilia Wallach, entitled On Faith. How do people stay true to each other? When I think of my parents all those years in the unmade bed of their marriage, not ever longing for anything else. Or no, they must have longed. There must have been flickering, stray desires. Nights she turned from him sleepless and wept. Nights he rose silently, smoked in the dark. Nights that nest of breath and tangled limbs must have seemed not enough. But it was. Or they just held on. A gift, perhaps, I've tossed out, having been always too willing to fly to the next love, the next and the next, certain nothing was really mine, certain nothing would ever last. So faith hits me late, if at all, faith that this latest love won't end or ends in the shapeless sleep of death. But faith is hard. When he turns his back to me now, I think, disappear. I think, not what I want. I think of my mother lying awake in those arms that could crush her, that could have, did not. On Faith, a poem by Cecilia Wallach from her collection Late, published by Boa Editions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The U.S. Forest Service has extended the application deadline for membership on the Tongass Advisory Committee to Friday, March 7, 2014. This 15-member committee will meet as often as once a month for the next year to develop a strategy for transitioning the Tongass National Forest to a timber program based on young growth management. Participation is voluntary, but the work you will do is critical to the future health of the forest and surrounding communities. For information or to apply before the March 7th deadline, visit the Tongass National Forest on the web and click on Tongass Advisory Committee.
Hello, this is Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, March 3rd. You're listening to KTOO News Juno. It is 3:37 p.m. Jeff Brown is running the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. And in the studio with me right now is Karen Barber. She's an attorney involved with the Success Inside and Out program. This is an annual day devoted to working with Lemon Creek inmates prior to their release. Thank you, Karen, for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So can you tell me a little bit about Success Inside and Out, of just what it is?
Sure. Basically, it's a program that helps provide prisoners with skills needed to avoid the pitfalls of the revolving jail door and kind of help them start a new life after serving their time in jail.
And how did it come about? Like, who's involved?
Originally, it's based on a program that was started by the Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Dana Fabe in Anchorage. And in 2008, we started it in Juneau. Originally, retired Judge Tricia Collins started it, and now Keith Levy is the one that spearheads it.
Okay. And so is it a group of attorney? Like, who's involved? So Judge Levy is...
Mm-hmm. There's a steering committee that's involved, court staff, people from Lemon Creek Correctional Facility. There are a couple attorneys on it, and just local community members that provide services that come into contact with prisoners.
Okay. So it's you go in, and then what's the program like?
Basically, it's a day-long program, and there's a couple. It starts off with a nice song and kind of gets the inmates kind of excited to be there. We have different speakers come in and talk. One of the
kind of things that seem to have the most impact is they have former inmates come back and talk about how they succeeded, how they got out, what they did differently, and how they're doing well. And then after that, there's breakout sessions where there's lots of different tables that the inmates can sign up to go to, personal finances, credit counseling, employment, housing, mental health, addiction, family, all those sorts of things, so they can go and talk to people in the community and find out what resources there are out there to help them once they are released.
Wow. How long have you been involved?
This is my third year participating, my second year on the steering committee.
Okay. So it's your third year participating in the program, so you're familiar with it. What are some of the standouts that you witnessed as far as the program and its impact?
Well, you know, it's hard to know, I guess, because I don't really come into contact with a lot of the prisoners once they are released. But for me, what really stands out is the inmates that come back, that have been released and come back and talk to others about how they have made changes in their lives. And generally, the stories are really moving and talking about getting their kids back and getting a job and beating addiction. And it's really nice to see that people can really succeed if they put their minds to it and if they tap into the resources in the community.
Right. Speaking of resources, it sounds like a great resource to start the process.
Absolutely.
Of rejoining our community. So speaking of community, if people want to help, they say, ooh, this sounds like a good program. I'd like to do something. What are your needs and how do people help?
Well, everyone gets a goodie bag and has the opportunity to win door prizes. So we could really use some help with that. We're looking for items such as gift cards, phone cards, stamps, or socks. And if people want to donate, they can contact Sharon Heisersdorf at the court clerk's office, and her phone number is 463-4700. And donations need to be received by this Friday because the program is on Saturday.
Oh, the program is on Saturday.
Yes,
when you say goodie bags, what are in the goodie bags?
A variety of different things. Pencils, paper, some gift cards, stamps. It depends kind of what donations we get. Sometimes calculators. Just
right.
Things that they could use once they get out.
And typically how many people are involved?
Generally between 55 and 60 inmates, and it's both men and women.
And they're the ones who will be released soon?
Yes, they are inmates that have a release date, in the near future.
Okay. And is this once a year that this program takes place?
Yes, once a year. This is our 7th annual Success in Sending Out program here in Juneau.
Okay, great. So one more time, can you give that number if people want to donate anything to this program?
Sure. It's 463-4700.
Sounds great. Karen, thank you so much for joining us, and to you and your other steering member committee, thanks for doing it. Sounds like a great resource.
Thank you.
All righty, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to listen to Sarah Beth Goh, who is playing with Jessica Campbell tonight at the Alaskan and tomorrow at UAS Rec Center. We'll be right back.
Kids in the city, we don't want to be alone. We're tearing down signs and putting up our own. Well, pick me up at 7 o'clock, boy. Bring me a flower, let's enjoy the evening. You look so nice in your plaid bow tie. And you look so fresh in your Sunday best. I like the way you walk and I like the way you speak. I like how you listen and you look at me. We kind of work well as kids in the city. Well, pick me up at 10 a.m. and bring me a coffee. Kiss me again. where this is gonna go. We're kids in the city, we don't wanna be alone. We're putting up signs and looking for home. Well, kiss me on the forehead, boy. Walk me to my door and good night. Exactly where this is gonna go. We're kids in the city, kids in the city.
Volunteer to help a child learn to read. Hi, this is Heather Mitchell, Literacy Chair for Rotary, Reading Tutor Coordinator for United Way, and a busy mom of two school-age children. Help us get everyone reading. We are looking for mentors and tutors for kids and adults. Check out our website, JunoRotaryLiteracy.org. We have pledge cards, posters, and tips on improving literacy, as well as how to make reading fun for kids.
Rotary, opening doors through literacy, Juno's capital idea.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. It's 3:45. That music we were just listening to is Sarah Bethko and Jessica Campbell are playing tonight at the Alaskan at 7 and tomorrow at UAS Rec Center at 7. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, March 4th. And in the studio with me right now are some folks who want to talk about something that's happening on Friday. It's the first Friday Double Exposure Show of the JPG Group. So the JPG Group, what is the JPG Group?
It is the Juno Photo Group, and it was started as a Facebook page.
Really? Mm-hmm. So that is Lori Stachinski, and Kenny Knapp is with her too. Hi, Kenny.
I am. Hi.
So it started as a Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay. So it was a place for people to post photos or just get together?
We post photos, different things on how to help people take pictures in different situations, like the Northern Lights. We've had a wonderful display of Northern Lights over the last few weeks or last month, and it's for new and established photographers to get together and share ideas and share pictures.
How often do you get together?
Oh, usually we just get together in the winter time, and a lot of times it's about every other week, one night every other week for meetings. But this winter it hasn't been quite as many.
Everybody's been out at the glacier taking pictures of the Northern Lights. Not that that happens at a meeting time, but that would be really nice if it did, though. So anybody could join. So for more information, they should go to the Facebook page?
Yes. You can just type in Juno Photo Group in the search on the Facebook page, and then click request to join.
Okay. And you've been around for a while. I mean, I've seen your shows. They're wonderful.
I think
it's
been a couple of years.
Okay.
Ron Guile and a few of them started it. But he's kind of the ramrod of the group, kind of keeps everything organized.
Moving along. Mm-hmm. Great. So what is this first Friday Double Exposure show? Where is it, and when is it, and what is it?
We are going to be doing a month-long display of photos here in the lobby at KTOO.
Oh, okay. Yep. Great.
And then also at 228 South Seward, we're going to be displaying photos at that location on Friday only.
Okay. And typical first Friday starts around 4:30?
Yes.
Goes to whenever?
4:30 to 7.
Okay. And how many members are going to be showing their photographs?
I'm not sure of the exact number yet, but I think there's going to be about 8 or 9 individuals displaying their photos at the 228 Seward location. And I'm not sure how many people are going to be displaying photos here. Probably about the same amount.
Okay. Will you be displaying, either one of you?
I think she is.
I am planning on both locations.
And what's the subject?
I still haven't decided yet. I think it's going to be a mix of various things, some of the ice caves, some maybe low tide pictures, sceneries.
Okay. And how many people are in your group? Do you know?
I think the last count was over 1,300. Obviously, not everybody is here in town. They're all over the world.
Wow.
But they're still members because they're Facebook members.
Uh-huh.
I think there's probably a few hundred here in town that are members.
That's great. And so you offer, you know, camaraderie and networking and tips,
sure,
and so on and so forth. So for each of you, Lori, let's start with you. What's the value of the group for you?
I think that it's just been a
It's helped me improve my photography skills in growing with photography.
Mm-hmm. Just having a group of peers that are interested in the same thing.
Right.
And what about you?
I like to share my photos with the people, and some of the. I'm also a Photoshop user, which I love, and a lot of people are not familiar with Photoshop. So some of the meetings, I give some Photoshop demonstrations on what they can do. We also have Lightroom. Ron does some of that. I also use Lightroom to kind of help them with post-processing, because a lot of people can take a picture, but, you know, the post-processing, to me, is important. It doesn't always come out of the camera exactly the way you'd like it. So, but it's just sharing information, sharing photos.
That sounds wonderful.
And if there's northern lights or if there's a bear or there's whales, usually within a few minutes it's all over the page, you know, so people that are monitoring it, you know, get the message that this is where they're at.
It's a Juno stampede. You know, five or six people actually show up. But still, that's great. That's a wonderful resource and sharing information. So are there challenges of keeping a group like this together, or is it easy because it's Facebook? It's just like, oh, I'll post this, I'll post that. I know that, you know, so-and-so will really be interested, you know, the group at large.
I think it's just a matter of each individual's. There's a lot of people that are on the Facebook page just to look at the photos. They've either been to Juno, used to live in Juno. So they'll just look at the photos there, and then there's a lot of us that actively share our photos and sometimes just want to get critique on what we could do better with our photography.
Right, so it could be, you know, what you want from it, because mm-hmm. it's mostly mm-hmm. online. Obviously, the Facebook element is online, so people get as much or as little out of it. Do you have a meeting coming up? You have this show this Friday. It's going to be here and at 228 Seward Street?
Correct.
From 4:30 to 7, and it's called First Friday Doubled Exposure. Is there a meeting on the horizon?
I think we're going to have one more meeting. We do the meetings at the Temsco helicopter place.
Oh, okay.
And so we only do it in the wintertime because obviously there's too much stuff going on in the summer.
They're a little busy?
Out taking photos.
Yeah. Taking and, photographers around.
So I think we have one more meeting, and I'm not sure exactly what day that it might be, a Thursday or it might be a Friday. I'm not sure.
Right.
But Ron usually posts it on the page.
On Facebook, Juno Photo Club Facebook. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Kenny, is there something specific that you like to shoot? Like, you know, or do you have a niche that's all your own? Or
pretty much anything that's legal.
Okay.
If it's not legal, I don't want nothing to do with it.
That's a good idea. That's a very good thing
to
say on the radio.
I like landscape. I like portraits. I like weddings. I like, you know, I like all that stuff.
Okay.
But I also really enjoy the post-processing. I love Photoshop. I love Lightroom. I can sit in front of the computer for 14 hours a day doing that stuff.
And it sounds like a great resource for anyone. You know, everybody's taking photos on so many different devices. Their phones, nice equipment, okay equipment. And also, like, flip phones and so on. Not the flip cameras and so on and so forth. So it seems like it's a wide range that, you know, it could be someone like myself who's pretty pedestrian or somebody who's mm-hmm. really serious. It sounds like the two of you are serious.
Yeah, it's for any level. You know, if you're a beginner or if you're a seasoned pro. If you're a seasoned pro, you can help some of the other people that want to learn. And if you're a beginner, it's a good place to, because a lot of people offer their information and help. Especially if you're out in the field taking pictures, especially the northern lights, because a lot of people don't understand it. It's hard to get northern light pictures with an iPhone or one of those little pocket cameras.
I think it's probably hard to get a good picture of the northern lights, period, but that might not be true. So I'm just saying, from my skill level, it'd be very hard. But it really sounds like a wonderful opportunity for like-minded people to get together and share their passion, you know, their passion, their hobby. So, Kenny, I asked you about your, you know, themes that you like best. What about you, Lori? Is there something like, you know, are you a flower person or are you?
I'm probably more of a landscape and animal person with my photography.
Okay. Great. So that is the Juno Photo Group. They're on Facebook. There is a show this Friday, and it's here at KTOO and also at 228 Seward. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to go to a bird note, and we'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. While it's still winter in many parts of North America, it's summer in Antarctica, and the birds are singing. At least, the penguins are.
A pair of king penguins stands face to face. They tilt their heads back, point their long bills skyward, and trumpet in unison. Second largest of all penguins, king penguins stand nearly 3 feet tall. They're surprisingly colorful, too, with a bright oval of lustrous orange-yellow adorning the back half of their dark heads. Some king penguins form breeding colonies that number in the tens of thousands, and when many pairs tip their heads back and sing, it sounds like the world's largest kazoo band. Altogether, more than 2 million king penguins nest on islands in the Southern Ocean, the sea that surrounds Antarctica. Their breeding cycle ranks among the longest of all birds. From the time the female lays her single egg in late spring, it'll take about 14 months before that chick is ready to fend for itself the following summer. We hope, with a loud send-off from the immense kazoo band. Writers for BirdNote include Bob Sundstrom, Ellen Blackstone, Chris Peterson, Todd Peterson, and Dennis Paulson. I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from listeners like you and T.K. McGuire's in the Prospector Hotel, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner with First Friday's wine tastings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. More information at T.K. McGuire's, 586-3737.
Hi, I'm Tom Cosgrove. Last November, Pat McClear and I shared an evening of stories. Coming out, stories of action and reaction. It was a powerful evening with a standing room only audience. In case you missed it or want to listen again, K2 will be offering it on the air on Monday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. You'll also hear the Juno Pride Ensemble. Won't you join us Monday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. for Coming Out, Stories of Action and Reaction.
Hello, and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Scott Burden will host, and he'll be talking with Jessica Campbell. We've heard a couple of her cuts today. She's performing at UAS tomorrow and at the Alaskan tonight. Elaine Schroeder, who was a woman of distinction for WARE, and Laura Dameron will be here to highlight the Guidance Through Grief support group for spring. Get more details about that Thursday's Writer Showcase here at KTOO, and Kristen Jarrett will be here to highlight alternative high school options for students. As for weather, today is clear, low 6 to 16. Tomorrow, sunny. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Wednesday, sunny. Wednesday night, clear. Thursday, sunny. Thursday night, partly cloudy. Chance of snow on Friday and snow Friday night. Thank you for sharing your Monday with us. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. It's 3:57 p.m. All Things Considered is next. And if you missed a piece of our show, feel free to check it out at ktoo.org, along with many other resources. Have a great Monday. Thank you.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay.